good afternoon, Juno, on a rainy and slushy afternoon, January day. Anyway, Juno afternoon. Pat Moore here on KTOO in Juno, and we have a great lineup of guests today for Juno afternoon. Tyson Flick will be here very shortly to tell us about the upcoming ASMI photo contest for folks who have pictures of fishing families taken in Alaska. Marion Call's coming by. She's doing Wednesday's KRNN Spotlight concert at the Goldtown Theater. She'll be singing a couple of her songs and talking to us about that concert. Scott Foster will come in Thursday. He's doing an Audubon presentation on kayaking in southeast Alaska. And the 49 Riders meeting is doing a follow-up meeting to a survey that they did at an earlier meeting right near the end of last year. And Linda Ketchum, the executive director of 49 Riders, will be joining us. So those things coming up on Juno afternoon. Right now it's time for National Native News. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal government offices and schools were closed across much of the upper Midwest on Monday due to extreme cold temperatures, and they're expected to remain dangerously low most of the week. J.P. Rehnquist reports from WGZS on the Fond du Lac Reservation in Minnesota.
Nothing like this has ever happened before.
At least not in the last 10,000 years.
This particular polar vortex won't be nearly as extreme as the one depicted in that clip from the 2004 sci-fi disaster film The Day After Tomorrow. But a cold snap of this magnitude is still relatively rare, and it is serious. Temperatures are far below normal for communities across Turtle Island, from the Rocky Mountains over to the East Coast and even into the Deep South. In Cloquet, Minnesota, where Nate Sandman is lead health educator for Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, the air temperature dropped to 24 degrees below zero on Monday, 50 below with the wind chill factor.
Today's temperatures right now, people can have frostbite within minutes. They are putting themselves at risk if they aren't following some basic safety instructions. Covering their hands, covering exposed skin, wearing multiple layers, including jackets, hat, and mittens.
Sandman says that although it is generally best to stay indoors when it is this cold, it's still important to check in regularly with potentially vulnerable community members, especially elders. Christine Davis, RN at Fond du Lac's Minoyuin Clinic, agrees.
I think family members and neighbors, as Nate mentioned, should be checking on these people at home to make sure that their heat is working in the home and they have food and water and basic necessities. Because if they're tough and prideful, they may not let people know what's going on.
Davis says that young children should also be watched closely. The forecast calls for continued extreme cold temperatures until at least Thursday, when it might reach 13 degrees above zero on Fond du Lac Reservation. For National Native News, I'm J.P. Rehnquist.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have launched a new project to collect health data on Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islanders. As Tristan Autone reports, the goal is to gather information on strengths, health problems, and needs of the community.
In the past, when the Centers for Disease Control conducted their National Health Interview Survey, health data on Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islanders was combined with health data of Asians. That meant not a lot was known about health indicators in Native Hawaiian and Pacific Island households, NPHI for short. Beginning 2014, a new survey may curb that issue.
With this new survey, we're going to dramatically expand the size of the Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander sample.
Adina Kalinske is with the National Center for Health Statistics.
We're going to go from about 100 households to about 4,000 households, and that will make it possible to release statistics about NHPI health on a much broader range of health indicators than we ever have before.
Questions about physical activity, alcohol consumption, asthma, and access to health insurance coverage will appear in the survey. The end result, expected in 2015, will be nationally representative health data on Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islanders for all 50 states, which Kalinske says could be used to develop culturally relevant health interventions, improvements to medical services, and future policy decisions. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
Presidential nominations sent to the Senate Monday include a Hopi woman. Diane Humitiwa is nominated to be U.S. District Judge for Arizona. Tribal leaders and Native organizations showed support when President Obama nominated her in September. If confirmed, it's believed she'll be the first American Indian woman in history to serve as a federal judge. On this day in 2013, California Assemblyman Roger Hernandez introduced a bill to replace Columbus Day with Native American Day and make it a state holiday. South Dakota is one state that already does that. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC-CLIC-GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My first guest is here to tell us about a really exciting photo contest that's coming up with a deadline of February 2nd. So that means that you need to start thinking about what you're going to do about this right away. Tyson Flick is with ASME, the Alaskan Seafood Marketing Institute. And they're having a contest that involves fishing families in Alaska.
That's right. We're really excited to have our second annual Alaska Fishing Families Photo Contest, where folks from all over the state are sending in some really terrific photos that help us tell the story and maximize the value of Alaska seafood all around the world.
So will there be more than one winner to this event?
There will be several winners. Uh-huh. We've got all different category winners, and each category winner gets an iPad. Then we have second and third prize, but what's really new this year is we're going to do a Facebook fan favorite. So after the deadline, the jury gets together, picks 20 or so images that will all go on a Facebook page where people can come and vote on their favorite photo. And the winner of the grand prize of the whole Facebook program will be a trip for two anywhere Alaska Airlines flies.
A nice little prize for doing the thing. So what kind of photos are you specifically looking for?
Well, we're looking for family photos, and that's all the people, great folks out there that make it all happen for seafood coming to the plate. Action, boat photos, fish photos, scenic, and then throwback or historic photos.
So these are the categories.
Those are all the categories. Okay. And so we're looking for just really striking imagery that really helps tell the story of what it's like here in Alaska and what it's like on the water and how important the seafood resource is to us.
So if I were going to submit a photo, would I choose the category or do you sort
them? We kind
categories?
Of file them into the category okay. as they come in. There's an awful lot of crossover.
Okay.
It seems like. So to enter, it's all online based. So you need to go to our website, photocontest.alaskaseafood.org. And it runs all through. We need some information, who took the photo, maybe where it's at, things like that. And then you upload the photo from there.
Now, you have in your rules, you talk about the necessity to make sure that the photo has a high enough resolution that you can actually use it for, like, print.
Ideally, certainly. Get towards at least 1 megabyte or so.
Okay.
Higher the file
size. 1 megabyte, you could actually take the photo with a modern cell phone.
And, sure. Something that's pretty amazing that you can have
a decent photo capability
right in your pocket so you don't miss it when those cool things happen. And living up here, we all know it happens all the time.
Yeah. So this is your second annual contest. Did you use photos out of the first one for a lot of marketing? What kinds of benefits did you get out of the first one?
Yeah, certainly. We used some in social media. We used some in recipe leaflets, telling the story of how these fish get to the market. Have some in our new kids recipe book. Photos were sent in of family set netting and cook inlet, and wow, that's a great addition to some of the printed pieces that we have.
Well, you were kind enough to bring along a copy of Alaska Style Recipes for Kids, which is the photo book that you're talking about. And there is a great selection of photos in the book, but also a great selection of recipes, which are all kind of chosen so that they can be prepared by children, usually with the – I notice most of these pictures have mom's arm or hand helping the child with this if they're very young. But these seem to be recipes that any kid could actually put together and enjoy serving up a meal to the family. How would someone acquire a copy of Alaska Style Recipes for Kids?
Get a hold of us at info@alaskaseafood.org, and we can send you one, or stop by the office there on Franklin Street.
Okay. What other activities besides the photo contest and like that is ASME involved in right now?
One interesting thing, tomorrow we've got a group from Walmart coming. There's been a lot of talk about the sustainability of Alaska seafood and whether it meets their sourcing policies. So they're actually bringing a group in. We're going to take them around to introduce them to some of the fishermen and scientists that that make it possible to have sustainable seafood in Alaska.
I think the issue here is that Walmart has signed obeying an agreement that basically would make Alaskan seafood not they couldn't sell our seafood?
Sort of. It was more that without a sustainability certification, one particular one, that maybe it didn't qualify. But I'm pretty hopeful that there'll be a quick resolution to all this.
Good. So ASMI has been in existence for quite some time, I think, hasn't it? How long have you been
over
trumpeting
30 years.
The news of
over 30
of
years.
Yeah. Okay.
Over 30 years. I think it was 81 that we started. Uh-huh. But we had a real big change in 2003 with shrunk the board from 25 down to 7 and changed the tax structure that supports the marketing efforts of ASME.
Were those good changes?
Absolutely. Made our organization more nimble and kind of spread the way that our fees are collected to include all the different species rather than having any one group have a larger weight in it. It used to be there was a small, say, 0.3% tax on all products, but then an additional 1% on just salmon.
Mm-hmm.
And you can imagine how salmon fishermen felt about that.
Right. So now the tax is leveled out across
all... 0.5% across the board and paid by all the processors.
We have a surprising number of species that are marketed out of Alaska. You think about salmon, but there's a bunch of other different kinds of seafood that are readily marketed out of here.
Sure. We catch more than half of all of the fish caught in the United States combined. Every year it's in between 53 to 55%. And like you say, it's beyond all five species of salmon. There's halibut. There's pollock is over
pollock
half
is
of the weight.
Yeah.
All the different species of crab and cod and black cod. And it's a pretty fortunate situation to get to tell that great story.
And as an assist to helping you tell that great story, we've got this upcoming photo contest, which deadline's on February 2nd. People need to go to your website to get the rules and some hints and tips on how to on what kinds of photos you're looking for. And anybody can enter, and anybody can win. Particularly if you can go down clear to just 1 megabyte of pixel strength on the photograph so that it can be ultimately printed and used by the ASMI.
At least, yes, as high resolution as possible.
You bet.
Photocontest.alaskaseafood.org to enter.
Folks, dig through your photo file, look through your camera roll on your phone, see if you got the winning picture. And if you have, go to, Alaska Seafood?
AlaskaSeafood.org.
Okay, go to that website for the rules of the contest and take a look. See if this is your opportunity to either win an iPad or what was the other prize? A trip around or a trip to anywhere.
Alaska Airlines flight.
Nice little trick. Tyson, thank you so much for bringing this to our attention, and thanks a lot for putting the contest on and for the work you do to promote Alaska Seafood.
Thanks for having me.
Join our studio audience at 5 p.m. Wednesday for the next Forum at 360. We'll be discussing political satire with the three funny men behind the Alaska Robotics label, Pat Race, Aaron Searing, and Lou Logan. They recently raised several $1,000s to create 6 webisodes of their satirical political news. The show will be live streamed at 360north.org and recorded for broadcast later on 360 North Television and KTOO FM. Doors open at 4:45.
It's 14 minutes and 33 seconds after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska.
Oh, I wish I were a real Alaskan girl. I wish that I could hold my beer. I would wear hip waders in summer and heels at 10 below. I that have sexy woolly legs with long and flowing frozen hair. Oh, to be a scow girl in the last frontier, where chicks run the Iditarod and win it. Oh, I would wrench on my own goose, and I'd jerk my own moose, and I'd drive a huge domestic truck and actually haul stuff in it. A little less sugar, a little more spice, a whole lot of fire and even more ice. From Kotzebue to Ketchikan, from Dead Horse to Attoo, Alaskan chicks can teach a city girl like me a thing or two. Oh, I wish I were a real Alaskan girl, because I hear that they kick ass. It's easy to see why a local woman's in demand. The guys have to queue up for years to get a chance to hold your hand. I would find me a big burly bush pilot boy. I'd hook and reel him in and fiancé him. But if he ever double-crossed me or tried to do me wrong, then I wouldn't hardly hesitate to skin, gut, and fillet him. I'd shoot more than a camera at the animals and such. I'd eat Rudolph for breakfast and Bullwinkle for lunch. Oh, Alaskan girls are fearsome and fearless by design. They kill mosquitoes with a look and mess with trusting tourists' minds. They're ruggedly handsome in their way. They're wild and free and meant to be that way. So from Jackaloff to Juneau, raise a glass to a proud and confident and deserving Alaskan woman, you know. And from Beaver to Tidlick, here's to ladies who understand that their self-image should have nothing whatsoever to do with their shade of lipstick. Oh, I wish I were a real Alaskan girl, but when it comes down to it, for most of us, Los Anchorage is gonna have to do it.
Yes, well, it always makes me laugh when this lady sings, and she's right here in the studio with me and getting ready to do a great concert here in a couple of, just a day here. You're doing it Wednesday night, right?
Tomorrow night, yeah.
Yeah, Marion Call is here to join me on Juneau afternoon today, and we're here to billboard a KRNN concert at Goldtown Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Which you're going to do a solo gig up there, and then you've got an interview that cranks into this whole thing, too, and some visuals and like that.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be the full experience. I love doing shows at the Goldtown. It's nice, and it's the right feeling, you know? Like, some people are better, you know, over at the Alaskan and stomping and dancing, and me, I'm better, you know, sitting in a theater seat and nice and quiet, and yeah. With the kids and with the, popcorn.
So this is a family show.
It's family friendly. Good. The content will be family friendly. I think they have beer and wine as well, but they're sort of a separate area for the for not 21s. And we always have a good time playing there. I've played there a few times, and I've done the KRNN showcase only once, and that's really fun because we do sort of a normal number of songs, but between the songs we do a little bit of interview, so it's a little bit like on Fresh Air they do a Christmas program that they sometimes air repeatedly, where they do, you know, songs and talking, or then, you know, piano jazz with Marion McPartland. I was raised on those.
Yeah. You play with words.
Yes.
Your lyrics require multiple playings. If you're going to get it all, you got to listen two or three times because, like on that last song that we just heard, I think there are 261 words in the last three stanzas.
Yeah, pretty much. Yep. I was raised on on Broadway and show tunes and on classical music and on kind of the great parody and satire musicians from Tom Lehrer and even like further back Gilbert and Sullivan, mm-hmm. and Weird Al, of course. And that was all. Words were so fun to me growing up, and I wanted to be Dr. Seuss, and no one ever told me that I couldn't. So, I loved rhymes. I loved wordplay, and I was a big nerd for all that in college. Everyone else would be doing Everyone else would be, I don't know, dedicated to figuring out some way to make a living as a technical writer. And me, I just wanted to scan feet and iams in poetry.
So I imagine you're deadly at Scrabble, right?
Yeah. Yep. It's making a living out of rhyming is that'll be the challenge of my life. It's fun though. I love it. I absolutely love it. I've got a whole new crop of songs for this concert. Actually, I just released a new album online, and I'll be playing songs from that at this show and a whole bunch of other stuff I've never done in Juneau before. So that'll be fun.
I wish I had an exact example, but there are places in your songs where I hear you rhyming really strange combinations of words.
Strange words, yeah.
And I
love it.
I guess I wonder, do those just, are you, when you're walking around, do those come to you and you think to yourself, you know, that'd be a...
I actually only speak in rhyme. If you encounter me on the street, I will be, no. No, that's not true. I just, I love it. Double rhymes, triple rhymes, assonance, consonants, alliteration, every single bit of it. I'm thinking that way all the time, and I love making words sound like each other. There's something nice about that. There's something, I don't know, hopeful about making words fit together in harmony, I guess. And yeah, I think that's my personal pleasure, is to try and exact as much meaning as I can and to make it as pleasant to listen to as I can.
So when you're doing this on stage, you've got to be watching the audience.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And their reaction to what you're doing, particularly if they haven't heard the song before, has got to be entertaining from the seat up there with the guitar.
Oh, it's fun. It's fun. And actually, I don't play guitar myself. I'll have Laura Zahasky will be playing with me this time. She's with the Alaskan String Band. She's amazing.
Yes, she certainly is.
We've been having some fun putting this show together. I finally get to play with another Juneau local. Watching the audience, and I do this for a living all year, and frequently during the summertime I'll be out playing 6 shows a night, and I never get tired of watching the audience response, both to the silly songs, the goofy songs, and to the very, very serious ones. I love watching.
Where are these six shows a night? Where have you been playing?
This year I did the whole American West, and then a quick run up the East Coast. I did Vancouver, and then I went to Europe. And the year before that, I did a lot of the East Coast and the Midwest, and I did Europe, and I did up and all the way across Canada. And then the year before that, I did 50 states and Canada. And if I plan my route carefully in 2014, 2015, I'll have done all 50 states twice.
And probably haven't slept for 6 months.
No. Oh, tour
I'm
is intense.
Starting
man.
To understand why the rhymes come to you.
Oh yeah,
sleep deprivation is a powerful tool.
Sleep deprivation is exactly it. Yeah, yeah. And I'm on airplanes a lot. Airplanes terrify me, and it turns out that being terrified on airplanes is very good for the creative juices. I've written a lot of songs on that approach into Juneau.
What is it? Nothing so concentrates the mind as a hangman's noose, or something
yes,
like that.
Exactly. Get some great rhymes out of that.
Yeah.
I tour a lot of the year, but Juneau's home. And what's funny is I live here, and yet I only do 2 or 3 shows a year here, because when I'm here, I'm just so relieved to not be doing 6 shows a night. So this is actually, tomorrow night's actually a fairly rare occurrence, and I'm very excited about it. I know there are still some tickets left, but it is expected that it may fill up. So mm-hmm. I think it's recommended that people get tickets in advance here at the studio or on the website,
KRNN.org. So, the K2 KRNN website,
mm-hmm.
or they can come by our studio here. And
yeah, that's right. And they're a little bit cheaper in advance as well. So.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But it looks like it. Based on the numbers, it might sell out. So
well,
I do
it's a small venue too, so you want to make sure you have insured your seat.
It's an intimate venue. I like
nice.
Playing there so much.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah.
So you're gonna do some video.
We're going to show some videos. Yeah, I've made some videos here,
mm-hmm.
and we'll show those and talk about those a little bit. And we actually filmed one over in the at the mine, the ruins of the mine on the other side of Douglas.
Oh, okay. Treadwell,
that's right. Mm-hmm. Man, that's cool over there.
Yeah.
I love it. That's one of the first places I saw when
I came
to Juneau.
I think they just got a grant or something like that last year or something. They did some improvements. They're just fairly recently. They've done some spiffing up on the exhibits and
it's
like that.
It's so great out there.
And then we got the new roof on the pump house this
You could make
summer.
A really good zombie movie.
Ah.
and I'm sure people have.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's what gold mining was all about, was the zombies, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
They dug too greedily. Okay,
too
so
deep.
What are you going to rhyme with zombie?
Zombie? Oh, I have a song about zombies.
Oh, do you?
Okay. I do, yeah. I don't think we'll be doing it tomorrow night, but you'll just have to come to some more concerts or check out the music online.
Well, we have to chase you around the globe in order to come to your concert.
And I'll be at Folk Fest. I'll be here for Folk Fest. I'll be running mics on and off the stage if they'll let me. I like to volunteer and hang out around for the whole week. That's going to be fun. And I'll probably have some shows coming up, maybe April or May. I don't know. We'll see if we book something. But it's
Marion, we keep talking about your concerts and something like that. But you said when you come here, it's nice to be able to kind of kick back. What do you do when you kick back in Juneau?
Lots of email.
Ah, okay.
Setting up all those other shows. Mm-hmm. I have been for the last couple of years traveling between 200 and 250 days a year, and I hope you don't know what that's like. Although a lot of Alaskans do. And setting all that up is a lot of work, and maintaining the web stuff, and I'm never quite on top of it. I'm always behind. But this year I'm hoping to travel a little less because I want to write. So I want to be home enough to write some. That might mean, you know, doing a little fundraising, applying for grants, things like that. But I've got a project I want to write, and I'm pretty excited about it, and I want to do it here. So,
Marion, I'm breathless listening to you. Your life is absolutely full.
It is definitely full, but I like it full, and I might not always have the opportunity to have it this full, so I better jump while I can.
So what time's the concert start tomorrow night?
Concert's 7 o'clock tomorrow night.
Okay.
At the Gold Town. And, okay.
And tickets on sale on the KTOO website,
yeah.
Or drop by the studio, and we'll sell you a ticket right here, and maybe you better do that, because this is getting real close to a sellout. Hey, welcome back to Juneau.
Oh, it's so good to be here.
Glad you're doing the concert. And everybody, come over Wednesday night to the Gold Town and listen to this lady come up with these incredible rhymes right there in front of you, just like that. Amazing stuff. Here we go. It's time for Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 7th of January, 2014. It's the birthday of the man most responsible for reviving Hebrew as a spoken language, Eliezer ben Yehuda, born in Lushki, part of the Russian Empire, 1858, who wanted to make sure that Jews from around the world could communicate with each other. Children from Jewish families in his time often learned some Hebrew at Hebrew school, but at the time no one on earth spoke modern Hebrew at home as a first language. Many European Jews spoke Russian or Yiddish, a Germanic language written in the Hebrew alphabet. Ben Yehuda felt that reviving Hebrew was intertwined with the idea of a Jewish homeland, which did not yet exist. So he raised his child to be the first native speaker of modern Hebrew, and he wrote the first modern Hebrew dictionary. Today it's spoken by more than 7 million people in Israel, one of the two official languages of Israel, the other being Arabic. It was on this date, 1610, Galileo wrote a letter describing his discovery of three of Jupiter's moons using his improved telescope. He observed them over the next few months, and then a fourth celestial body appeared, and he realized that they were actually orbiting the planet. Most people at that time still believed that the Earth was the center of the universe and everything revolved around us, and Galileo's discovery of the moons went a long way toward confirming Copernicus's theory that the Earth revolved around the sun. Today is the birthday of Zora Neale Hurston, born in Notasogra, Alabama, 1891, grew up in Eatonville, Florida. She later set many of her stories in Eatonville. She went to Howard University, then Barnard College in New York, studied anthropology, the only black student at the school, published many short stories in the 20s and early 30s. Her first book was Mules and Men, an anthropological study of African-American folklore, best known for her novel Their Eyes Were Watching God. Here's a poem for today by Sally Blumenstein, entitled Crossword. The white and black squares promise order in the morning mess of mulling over the latest political morass, what's on sale at Kohl's, the book review. Each letter shared, which lifts away some sheen of loneliness I can't quite explain. This week, arsenic and forsythia are joined by their eyes, like long-estranged cousins. And when they ask for the French equivalent of sky, I'm back on a wooden chair in Madame Baumlin's eighth-grade class, passing a note to David, having no idea, as my hand grazes his, that he will drown sailing that next summer. I like doing the crossword with my husband. Source of support, three letters. I'm the one who guesses it. Glad he doesn't think of bra in this way. The puzzle rests on the counter all week. I like coming back looking at the same clue I found insolvable the day before, my mind often a mystery to me, turning corners when I sleep or I'm upstairs folding clothes. They get added to pounds. Yesterday, I thought it had to do with money or meat. Now I can see the chain link fence at the local animal shelter. Of course, strays. Crossword, a poem by Sally Bloomis Dunn from her collection Second Skin, published by Wind Publications and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 29 minutes before 4 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next guest is here to tell us about a presentation that he is about to do, Thursday at the Thunder Mountain High School Library, and this is Scott Foster. Scott has got a few thousand miles underneath his buns in kayaks around the country here. So you've been along the shore of Alaska, pretty much. Huh?
Well, I have, Pat, and I have tried to figure out how many miles I've paddled, and a few years ago I started keeping track, and so I think since 1997 until this year I paddled, I think it was about 6,000 miles.
Wow.
But, you know, it doesn't take so long if you go out on a few trips that are 100 or 200 miles long and then some other trips 10 or 20 miles if you go around Douglas Island or go out to Berners Bay. And if you do it, I'm retired and I have time and I go out a bit in the summer. And at the end of the summer, if you keep track, you have piled up some miles.
Yeah. So this gives you a chance to see from a really interesting perspective. The one thing that's wonderful about kayaks is that you are literally one with the water. You're right down at the water level. And even in a canoe, you're up higher, which is probably the next step up. And then in a powerboat or something like that, it's almost like driving a car. You're compared to walking along the side of the road.
Well, I've told myself the same idea with different words a number of times. Like getting up in the morning after spending the night on a beach, you're out, and then your takeoff in the morning and a morning in the summer, but weather like this that we frequently have, cloudy and rainy and cool and a little wind, and you've gotten out of your tent and your sleeping bag and you've packed your boat, and now you're off paddling, and invariably there comes a cruiser boat going by, you know, a private, I don't know what you call them, a boat,
yeah,
but an inboard with a cabin, and I have this vision of the husband at the wheel, the wife sitting at the table, a warm cup of coffee, and you know, breakfast being cooked, and here we're out there in the elements with nothing but a raincoat and, you know, our hat and our kayaks, and I, you know, as nice as that looks, I always think I'd rather be where I am than on that comfortable boat.
Interesting.
But that's just my perspective, of course. I'm sure the people on the boat are wondering, what is that crazy guy doing out there?
Absolutely, yeah. Or maybe they're sitting up for thinking, you know, when I get back to town, I'll sell the boat and buy a kayak.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of kayaks around, and getting more and more. I'm particularly interested in them because that's what I do for fun. And so maybe I notice more than other people do. But look at the kayak racks on the number of cars. And there's a lot of kayak racks, and you're just walking around any place in town, you see kayaks in backyards, and you know, and there's a, I'm not here to try to sell the sport of kayaking, but I do enjoy it, and I'm pleased to have the opportunity to sort of bring my experiences in kayaking to the Audubon Society meeting on Thursday.
And so how many of those thousands of miles have you kayaked alone versus how many with groups?
Quite a few, maybe a third of them. It's more dangerous going by yourself, and I've gone through different mental states thinking, I'm willing to take the risk, and if this is the last trip I make, I've had a lot of great ones, and I hope I go out with grace. But I think as I get older, I'm getting more cautious and thinking, you know, I'm by myself, and if something happens, this might be the end, and I'm not ready for it to stop yet. I want to take more trips.
So, yeah, so how do you get a group together?
Well, I've got friends, and I've kayaked here a lot, and so it's... You know, it's usually just sometimes planning ahead a bit because not everybody's retired and can just take off when nice weather hits, and they sort of have to plan their vacation time.
But, so let's talk gear for a minute here.
Gear, okay.
So say you want to you haven't sea kayaked, which is me. I've freshwater kayaked, but I've never sea kayaked.
Uh-huh.
So what would I need to get set up if I decided I wanted to do this?
Well, let me put it in a financial perspective, first of all. The boat that I have right now is maybe 8 years old, and it's a pretty high-quality boat. Its current design is the brand name. And it cost me $2,500.
Okay.
So,
but that was 8 years ago.
Yeah, so it's in the $3,000 range to get a high-end sea kayak now. You can get them for less.
Just fiberglass?
That's a plastic one. Yeah, fiberglass.
Okay.
And that's probably best for Southeast. You can get plastic ones, which are less expensive, but they're heavier, but they're indestructible. But fiberglass is what most people use. Mm-hmm. I just looked up online today before coming down here how much it would cost to buy a 10-horse outboard motor, about $3,000.
Yeah.
So with a kayak, with that $3,000, you get the outboard motor, which is the auxiliary motor for your boat, which has an inboard on it, and who knows how much the boat and the inboard and all that, and maintenance costs. Once you've got your $3,000 in your kayak, if you take even modest care of the boat, it'll last you forever.
Okay.
Then there's other things.
There's other gear.
Sure.
So what else do we have to have?
Well, okay, we'll just start from you have to have a spray skirt that fits tightly around your stomach and then around the combing of the cockpit so water doesn't get into it. If you lean over or if waves are breaking on the boat or if for some reason, or rain, and so it keeps you dry from the waist down.
Okay.
And a life jacket, always wear a life jacket. And then the clothing that you, well, then to stay with kayak gear, you've got to have a paddle, and I always carry a second one. In all the trips I've been on, I've only once somebody stepped on a paddle and broke it. So, you know, I'm careful about paddles, and everybody is, but so you've got a paddle, and then you've got dry bags that you put your gear in so that they, when they're on the beach, if it's raining, they're not getting wet, and if you get a lot of water in the boat, they're in watertight compartments on the boat, so they don't get wet, but everything goes in dry bags. And so, and then you've just got regular camping gear. You've got your sleeping bag and your stove and your pots and your tents and your clothing that we all wear, but it just kayak clothing is also, you know. So for $3,000 for a brand new boat now, and maybe $500 more, I think you'd be outfitted to be able to go kayaking for the rest of your life here in Southeast.
Hmm. Not an overwhelming expense for the possibility of a heck of a lot of fun. So then once you have all of these things, I know that there are kayak courses that are offered out at the University of Alaska Southeast as part of their recreational uh-huh. program. There are also companies in town where you can go rent kayaks, and they will take you out on Auk Lake, I think, and teach you a little bit about the kayak and like that. I'm assuming that would be a wise thing to do if you were moving
sure
into this
would.
Hobby.
It's for people that haven't been in a kayak and look at them, I think one quick image is that they're small and unstable and scary to be in. And I've taken people out who have never been in boats before, and most people, once they get in it, your body weight is very low, and the boats aren't so tippy as they might appear to be because you're sitting right at the water level,
mm-hmm.
and most of your weight is right at or just even an inch or two below the water level. And depending on the design of your boat, some of them tip a little bit easier than others. So if you have a flatter bottom, it sits more stably, but you have a little sacrifice. And if you lean quite a bit, then they might tip over more easily. But generally, most modern boats have got a design that when you sit in it, you feel pretty comfortable. So I think a lot of people go out with no experience at all and find out that it isn't very difficult. And then I think with maybe like with a lot of sports, it's not so hard to start. But then I think the difficulty comes in on having the judgment to be able to be safe when you think, well, this isn't nearly as hard as I thought it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so whether you're skiing and somehow you can get down the hill and you think, I made a run without falling. And then you go down the Black Diamond course and you bash into a tree because you had bad judgment. So it's easy to go out on a few easy day trips or paddle in Hawk Lake or the Mendenhall Lake or, you know, along the shore on a calm day and think, well, this isn't so bad. And you go on a trip and make a crossing. Winds come up, waves come up, you lose your balance, and then it's life and death.
But something about it must have really struck a chord inside you that would make you put all these miles on the kayak. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, you ask good questions. I've wondered about that on these miles and miles of paddling slowly at 3 miles an hour along the shoreline. I've wondered, why in the world do I do this? And the reality is I used to be a mountain climber when I lived in Anchorage and before I came to Alaska. And so that was my sport. And then I moved to Juneau and I didn't mountain climb anymore. And I started sea kayaking. And I've been doing it now for 40 years here in Southeast, or 45 years, I guess. And I wonder, you know, something that has a bit of excitement or potential excitement like mountain climbing, mm-hmm. compared to the relative tranquility of paddling on the near shore in a sea kayak, why I do it. And I guess there's a mental state that I think you get into that is pleasant. I like the country I live in, that we live in. And partly I've thought maybe what it is, it's like the old prospectors that came through here and for the gold rush and the Klondike gold rush. You know, they went through terrible, difficult conditions, and they always hope that next gold pan is the one.
Yeah.
And so in a sea kayak, I thought part of the attraction is every time you go around a point, a little point or a rock so you can see the beach a little bit ahead, maybe you're going to strike it rich. Maybe there'll be a brown bear on the beach, or there'll be a deer, or there'll be an otter coming out of the trees, or a mink, or an eagle, or birds that the Audubon Society likes, and I like too, looking at them, even though I can't name very many of them. So I think that's a part of it, is always wondering what's around the next corner. And I do like the aspect of just being on the water. I like the routine of the modest exercise, but able to do it for hours all day long. And I like camping on beaches. And I like the evenings, even if it's raining, to, you know, put up a tarp or to have a little beach fire and sit there and be in that world. I find a lot of pleasure in it. So there's that physical part of it. But then I think without thinking about it too much, there's a mental part that comes through that is very pleasurable, especially after being out for several days, when you leave the habits or the routines of city life behind and you have to adapt to the demands of living in the outdoors with your tent and your food, a lot of conveniences, but I like that too.
Scott Foster, who's going to share some of this joy that he takes in this thing that he's done now for 40 years in Southeast Alaska. He's doing a presentation for the Audubon Society. Everybody's welcome to it. It's at the Thunder Mountain High School Library at 7 p.m. on Thursday evening. No charge, right?
That's right.
Walking off the street?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, come on down, folks, Thursday night and listen to Scott. And I assure you that having sat here in the studio with him, that this man has a fascinating ability to tell a story and to get you interested in what he's doing. So join him Thursday night and listen to the talk.
Thanks, Scott. Thank you.
little music there by Stefan Grossman and Duck Baker. It's just about 13 minutes before 4 o'clock, and very shortly here we'll be talking with one of our guests from Anchorage by telephone. Linda Ketchum will be here to tell us about a meeting for 49 writers here in town. Right now, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. You've heard the term jaywalking. Any idea where it comes from? Traffic signals and jaybirds wouldn't seem to have much in common. Well, the term jaywalking originated back in 1917. Cars had recently become common on the streets of Boston, and for the first time, the act of stepping out into traffic posed a problem. In those days, jaywalkers would encounter Model Ts tooling along at the breakneck speed of 20 miles per hour. The term jay was then slang for a hick, a rube, or a country bumpkin. Sophisticated city dwellers with little tolerance for rural folk coined the term jaywalker to describe someone green to the ways of the city and to modern traffic signals. But why jay? Anyone who's observed the eastern blue jay or the Steller's jay of the west would describe them as noisy, bold, brash, and impudent. So, those sophisticated Bostonians might have combined the foolish country bumpkin term and the sometimes obnoxious nature of jay behavior when they coined the term jaywalking. Who knows for sure? If you do, come join the conversation on our Facebook page or our website, birdnote.org. The bird sounds for Bird Note are from the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. I'm Mary McCann.
I'm traveling singer-songwriter Marion Call. Join me for the next concert in the KRNN Spotlight Series on January 8th at 7 p.m. in the Goldtown Nickelodeon. I'll be singing my original acoustic songs about life on the road and home in Alaska. Most songs will be from my brand new album, Sketchbook. I'll be joined by local musician Laura Zahasky and host and interviewer Pat Race. Again, that's January 8th at the Goldtown. Tickets and information at krnn.org and at the station.
It's just 10 minutes before 4 o'clock. We're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next guest is coming to us by telephone. Linda Ketchum is the executive director of the 49 Writers Meeting. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you, Pat.
Yeah, so I understand that you're holding a special meeting down here in Juneau. The 49 Writers is primarily based in Anchorage, isn't that right?
We are an Anchorage-based organization, but we do have a statewide mission. And now that we've been going for about 3.5 years, we're ready to reach out into other communities and see what activities we can provide for writers. So this meeting is what we call a Resolve to Write gathering. It's been a tradition in Anchorage for our membership to get together in January every year and talk about our writing resolutions for the coming months and to provide support to each other as we move forward with that. And it seemed like a good time to come back to Juneau and follow up on a meeting we held back in October. Not only talk to people about what they hope to accomplish in this year with their writing, but also to report on a survey we conducted after the October meeting to find out what writers in the area are interested in, what could we possibly do to support them in the community. So we had a very good turnout last time. We had about 16 or 17 people, and one of our members is very generously hosting this event in her home, and we're hoping to connect with some new writers, too.
So as I understand it, the size of the venue is such that you can only probably welcome about 20 people to the meeting. Is that right?
I would think so, 20 to 25, yes.
Okay, and so folks who want to come to this need to go through a process of using Evite. Is that what you told me?
Yeah, we would. You know, we're happy to send you an invitation and provide the details for how to join the meeting. It's going to be in someone's home downtown, and you can do that. You can contact us by emailing 49writers@gmail.com, or you can just call me, and the number is 907-244-4950. We'd love to hear from you and get you involved, and to find out, you know, what your interests are and what your needs are as a writer.
Okay, so you don't have to have been one of the people who attended the October meeting in order to come to this one?
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, not at all. This is a process of outreach to engage with all writers in the community.
I understand that the purpose of the meeting is to go over the survey, but I'm curious, would you be willing to tell us some of the things which came out of your survey?
Yes, I did. People are very interested in gatherings like this, where they can meet periodically and connect with other writers, because, as you know, it's a pretty solitary pursuit. And writers aren't necessarily gregarious people, but we do like to get with other writers now and again and talk about what we're doing and learn what's going on in their writing lives. Folks were also interested in a writing group, an ongoing writing group, so that's something we're going to talk about with everyone on Thursday. What's the level of interest in that, and how might we move forward with that? And there was also considerable interest in our creative writing workshops. So we're in the process of working with a couple of writers to see if they would be willing to come down to Juneau later in the year and offer workshops on craft or publishing in the community. We have been talking with partners at UAS and also at the Juneau Library, and there's a lot of support from community partners, and that really is how we manage to make things happen. We're a very small organization. I'm the only staff member. I'm part-time. But we have great volunteers and partners in a lot of different places, and together we can usually make something happen. We're also hoping to do a more extended literary event in Southeast in September, and I'm working on a grant application to make that happen. And there's been interest expressed in Sitka and Ketchikan and Craig for that program. So we're actively working with people there and hopeful that it will get funded and come to reality.
And then are there other plans beyond this meeting for specifically to happen in Juneau?
Well, there's a good chance that we can offer a couple of writing workshops in May, and also one in September. But I really want to hear from the people on Thursday what interests them, so that we can choose the topic that's going to be most relevant to the needs of our writers in Juneau.
So it sounds like one of the real missions that you have in mind when you come down is actually to kind of listen and find out what else people might be interested in having 49 writers do.
That's a really good way of putting it. It's the continuation of a listening tour that started in October.
Okay. So once again, the instructions are not terribly complex, but because of the size of the space that is being set aside for the meeting, if you would like to come to this, you want folks to go to your website, 49writers@gmail.com.
Yeah, to email me.
Or call you at 907-244-4950. Did I get the number right?
That's right, yes.
Okay.
We're starting as a small gathering, but it's just a beginning. And, you know, as interest grows, we'll certainly move to a place for future events that mm-hmm. can accommodate everyone who wants to participate.
So if this is of interest to any of our listeners, it sounds like we have an open invitation for folks to contact Linda up in Anchorage, and she will arrange for you to receive an invitation and give you directions on how to get to the house where the meeting will be. And this is Thursday night at 7 o'clock, probably a couple, 3 hours maybe at the most, for folks who are interested in activities involving the 49 Writers Organization.
That's right, and I should mention, too, that a handful of our writers, our members, are going to read from their work, And that's one of the features of these gatherings that we've started in Anchorage that we're calling literary salons. It's a chance not just to socialize, but also to share a little bit of your work and learn more about what people are doing with their writing.
So if people do receive an invitation, are they also invited to bring perhaps some of their writing to share?
If they would like to read, we have a few people signed up. We have to limit it because of time, but mm-hmm. if they're interested, I can connect them with the person who's organizing that, and they can get their name on the list.
Linda, thank you so very much for telling us about this event. And folks, if you're interested in this, once again, the email address is 49writers@gmail.com, or you may call Linda at 907-244-4950, and she will send you the information on how to get to this gathering, to the Resolve to Write gathering, which is going to be held here on Thursday at 7 o'clock. Linda, thank you so much for bringing this to everybody's attention.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, see you later.
Bye now.
As a special way to commemorate KTOO's 40th anniversary, Juno artist Constance Baltuk has created a special limited edition print from her painting titled Waterfall, Salmon Creek. We're offering 200 prints signed and numbered by the artist as a 40th anniversary fundraising gift for KTOO. To learn more, visit ktoo.org.
Well, it's a couple of minutes before 4 o'clock. Pat Moore, really enjoyed being your host today for a Tuesday edition of Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow, Lisa Fu will be here, and she's going to be talking with Marja Hamburger from the City Museum. Brian Sullivan will drop by to highlight his new CD. Kevin Hood's coming in to give a preview of the Wildlife Wednesday program. This is the anniversary of the Wilderness Act that he's going to be talking about, and we'll get a little information on the mountain lift at Eagle Crest. So all of those things are coming up on the Wednesday edition of Juno Afternoon tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Tune in. This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juno, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. And support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and thank you very much, listeners like you.